It's Tuesday, August 8th, 2006. You're moving at the speed of creativity with Wesley Fryer, narrowcasting from Edmond, Oklahoma. Good evening, and welcome to another podcast from the MTI 2006 conference, which was the Mid-America Technology Institute, hosted by MACE, the Mid-America Association for Computers in Education, that is based in Kansas. This presentation was given a couple of weeks ago in Winfield, Kansas, and the title of the presentation is Learning as Conversation and Messy Assessment. And it was really fun to have a chance to share some of these ideas with Kansas educators and also to have a chance to share them with you. And so I will point you to the podcast show notes where I will include a variety of links that I mentioned during the presentation, and also encourage you, if you're willing and interested, to give me a shout out at the iTunes Music Store. You can go to the podcast directory in iTunes and search for either Speed of Creativity or Moving at the Speed of Creativity and leave some feedback if you'd like for me and anyone else who might be interested in learning about the podcast. So I will, as always, encourage you to provide any other feedback that you might have also as a comment on the podcast post itself on the blog. And I would also be interested to know if anyone is wanting to see this as an enhanced podcast. The other presentation that I gave at MTI, I actually did publish as both an enhanced podcast and as an audio-only podcast, and I really haven't gotten much feedback. I don't do a lot of enhanced podcasts. It does take a fair bit of time to do the post-production on that, which involves pretty much just dragging the JPEG slides that you can export out of PowerPoint or Keynote into either Ubercaster, which is the program I'm using now for podcasting, or you can do that with GarageBand. But anyway, if you enjoy enhanced podcasts and that's something you'd like to see, I would be interested to know that because I really haven't had feedback on that. So anyway, hope you enjoy this, and thanks to the folks at MACE for also making this available on CanEd Live, which is the website of the Kansas Education Department, and the podcast show notes, I'll include that link in case instead of listening to this, you would like to actually see this on your computer because they've made that video possible. Thanks again to my son, Alexander, who has provided the introductory music that I use in this and pretty much all of my other podcasts. And good luck to each of you, as many of us here in the Northern Hemisphere are in the process of starting a new school year. And I hope that school year is a very successful one, and we'll look forward to continuing to learn together here in the EduBlogosphere. About teaching and learning in perhaps different ways than we have traditionally thought about teaching and learning. Because we have been doing this business of school for a long time. We have been pretty much doing it the same for a long time. And that needs to change. And so today, we're going to talk about learning as conversation and messy assessment. And I think how many of you are new to the session? Do we have any new folks? Okay, well, my name is Wes Fryer, and I'm the education advocate, the Director of Education Advocacy for AT&T for the state of Oklahoma, and my role is really to help schools that are K-12, that are university, think about how they're using their bandwidth. What kinds of ways are you leveraging the power of the technology that you've purchased to engage kids and to help them learn and acquire the skills they need for life, not just for the test? And so we're going to talk about this idea of conversation and messy assessment, and I'm going to be very personal right up front. And I'm going to tell you that these are some of the reasons why I believe we need to have this conversation today. These are my kids. And we, you know, as adults, are very used to a traditional environment of transmission-based education. The foundation of our instruction has been what? For years. Okay? What do we do when we get content? Where do we go? We go to the textbook. We go to the teacher.
okay? But learning needs to look a lot more like this than it looks at this very moment. There's not a time, I'm not saying we don't need to lecture and there's not a time for direct instruction. Of course there is. We're doing this together now, and it's important to do that. But this isn't what we should do all the time. And I think especially as we get higher up, I've taught elementary school, and I've now taught 3 graduate and undergraduate classes at Wayland Baptist University in Lubbock. Sometimes as we get higher up the food chain, perhaps, or I don't know if that's the right word, in education, we begin to think that we need to focus more on the content than the student. And we need to focus more on the material than on the interaction. So I'm going to share a couple links with you. It'll be the only things you need to write down. I have cards here that have links to my blog if you want to link to that. And then we'll just go to the outline and we'll see what we can do here in the next 40 minutes or so. This is my blog site, which is called Moving at the Speed of Creativity, speedofcreativity.org. And I have found, as I have been presenting now for several years, that the more we share, the more we learn. I learn so much from other people when I share things. And so that's really what the edublogosphere, this idea of blogging, is all about. It's an interactive dialogue. And so the materials that I'm sharing today are going to be shared on the CanEd website, and they're also going to be shared as a podcast on my website. And you can go to this site, which is a wiki. How many of you have used a wiki before to type something? It's a web page you can type on, okay? So you don't have to use FrontPage. You don't have to use Dreamweaver. You don't have to take a long class. What you have to do is click Edit and then put in the word MACE, because that's a little password that I set up for this. And the website is mti2006.pbwiki.com. And I've put links to the resources that I'm going to talk about today, the slides. You can link to Will Richardson's stuff from yesterday. Other presenters at the conference have also shared their resources. And this is the way sharing is happening now in the 21st century, and the way it will increasingly happen. And it's an organic type of sharing where there's not a single person as the gatekeeper of all the information, but together we're creating content, we're sharing it. Last session we talked about digital social networking, MySpace. What are we going to do to prepare kids for this environment? This session, we're talking about what we need to do in the classroom and what our classrooms need to look like and what the interactions need to look like. So I'm going to start by asking a simple question. So how do we learn? And I'm not going to get into a lot of psychology and you know, very technical things, but is that an important question for us to consider? Do we all learn the same? We know this, right? Why do we keep trying to make everyone learn the same way? We shouldn't, because we all learn differently. We're going to talk about assessment. Is assessment a word we all understand as teachers? I could throw a lot of acronyms at you like RSS, blogs, podcasts, XML. I mean, we could get lost quickly in acronyms, but you understand assessment. How many of you do assessment with kids? Many of your districts do assessment. We all have to do assessment. But the point I'll make today is that the assessment we need to do is often messier than what we're doing for the state test or for the federal government. Because if we're going to authentically prepare kids for the future, we can't have that tunnel vision on what is a minimum standard that's a test. We've got to do a lot more. And actually, we're going to have fun doing it. I mean, that's the thing. You can get joy, you can get engagement when you get to what's called profound learning. And that's what I'm going to advocate for today. So, why do we want to change? Hopefully, we're going to be able to video conference with either Tim Wilson, who is in Minnesota, and Brian Crosby, who's in Reno, Nevada, who are standing by to talk to us. Tim is the Director of Technology in a district in the Twin Cities in the Minneapolis area, Minneapolis-St. Paul, and his website is technosavvy.org. Tim is probably one of the best educational podcasters in the world. You can go listen to his podcast and learn from him like I do and many other people. And it is just great to have this opportunity to get to know people that without the blogosphere, I probably would never run into. We're also going to talk about things that I've abbreviated ML and MA, messy learning and messy assessment. And do we have in NCLB? Did NCLB say we need some messy assessment. No, it didn't. And Brian Crosby has a blog that's called Learning is Messy. And he's all about messy learning. He's an elementary teacher that goes up with his kids. What do you call that when you have taught them in fourth and you go up to fifth?
Looping.
He loops. Okay? He just finished with sixth grade. He's looping back down with another group of fourth graders in Sparks, Nevada. And so we'll see if we can get our network to work. Our technology is working. It's a network issue. This is why if you video conference, you definitely want to work hand in hand with your administration so they can understand the value of doing it. That's why most presentations I'm doing now, especially with administrators, I will use Skype, I will use iChat, I will bring in somebody from the outside world and say, isn't it great that we were able to hear from this person across the country? I haven't done it yet in a session across the globe, but that's possible. They could share their perspective, they could share their voice. And so hopefully this will work, but let's talk about how we learn. A lot of us, we're adults, we're digital immigrants in our society today, believe that learning looks like this. Okay? What do you see in this picture? Teacher is?
You.
Talking. You see me. I'm doing this right now. I'm at the front. I'm talking. What are the students doing?
Watching, listening,
taking notes, drooling, hopefully not asleep. Maybe not. Maybe they're engaged. Maybe this is a real exciting presentation. But the point is, we have a lot of passivity on the part of the learner. We have a lot of active stuff happening with the teacher. I believe authentic learning looks a lot more like this. Conversations that you have. I mean, what really changes you as an adult? You're still, you know, potentially, we all are, learning and growing and changing every day. But I think the conversations that we have perhaps have more potential than anything else to change us. Even when I read something, it's really not until I talk about it, or maybe I write about it, I interact, and do something with that it becomes my own. So I'm just going to assert that conversation is how we learn, and I'm going to try and model some learning opportunities today that'll hopefully drive that home today. If you look up assessment on dictionary.com, you'll see different definitions depending on how you pronounce the word. But the fifth definition here, it says to determine the value, significance, or extent of, to appraise. First one is to estimate the value of. We assess in school. I will never stand up and tell a group of teachers or principals or superintendents or anybody, man, let's get rid of assessment. Because how in the world would you know what your kids are learning, if they're getting it, if they're understanding it? We do not need to abandon assessment, and I don't think anyone is saying that. If you look at synonyms and thesaurus.com, synonyms for assess are to appraise, estimate, apprise, assay, compute, estimate, gauge, judge, reckon. There's a lot of different terms.
Can I get a question?
You sure can.
I have a cousin. He's walking the Great Wall of China. He's like,
from China.
So if you'd like to talk to him just for a second.
Well, sure.
So, anyway, Brendan.
Here, bring your laptop up here and let's plug into the projector. So is this a teachable moment?
Yeah.
Have you Skyped with somebody from China before?
No.
No? So let's do it. Let's take that slide off.
Anyway, you're going to be talking about 40 people. This is my cousin Brendan. He's walking several thousand miles along the Great Wall of China and using Skype to communicate with my aunt and uncle, but I just slime on there.
Hi, Brendan. How are you?
Lost the connection. Don't know if you can hear on that end.
Okay, yeah, we're hearing you. Can you hear us? Can you hear us? Oh, you just dropped. So you were talking to him?
Yeah.
Cool. All right. Well, you know what? I appreciate that opportunity. This is something that happens when you use Skype and iChat and these other tools, is the world interrupts. And our challenge is to leverage that for learning. okay? Because No Child Left Behind is here, it is the law, and I am not here to say, let's not follow the law. We gotta follow the law, okay? Our kids have to take tests. Did you take tests in school? I took tests in school. I didn't really take a high-stakes test in school. The same way that we have kids taking tests today. But unfortunately, I think what we see a lot of times in education are teachers that feel like they're being told to be monkeys, to be more planners and performers than designers and facilitators. And we have kids that are bored, that are not engaged, and are dropping out of school. And so we're going to talk today about what we can do about that, because you or I, by ourselves, are not going to be able to change the political culture of the United States or the educational culture of the world by ourselves. But we're not alone. And so we have incredible potential today to collaborate and work with people around the world who are like-minded and who are saying, I want to engage my kids. I want to help prepare my kids for the future. And it's very exciting. So we're going to do a little inspiration activity. How many of you use inspiration? Great tool, great for brainstorming. And we're going to brainstorm how we assess. And so I'm going to give you about 2 minutes. I'm going to put a timer up here. You're going to turn and get one or two other people and appoint a secretary. If you were here in the last session, get a new scribe. And I want you to write down as many ways that you can think of that you have been assessed in school, that you see kids be assessed in school, that you actively, you know, assessment methods you use. How do you know what the kids know? How do you know what they're doing? What are the different ways? I want you to come up with as many. I don't want you to judge and say, oh, that's stupid. You know, I want you to, you know, write it down. It's okay. And then we'll share here in a minute. Okay? So take about 2 minutes. Brainstorm how we assess learning. That's fun, you know. You learn a lot from elementary teachers, and learn a lot from teachers that teach younger kids than I taught when I was in school about how to get the attention of even large groups. So you have brainstormed with your group. You have come up with a list of things that, ways that we assess. So I'm just going to do a brainstorming activity. We wouldn't have to use technology to do this, but since we are, it's going to be very easy for me to share and put that on the wiki and basically share this information. So let's just kind of go around, and we'll go around maybe twice, and then we'll just open it up, and let's start over here and just blurt out. We'll kind of just go around, and I'll type as quick as I can ways to assess and try not to repeat if you do, that's okay.
Eye contact.
I'm sorry?
Eye contact.
Okay.
Finish shareable project.
Finishing a shareable project.
Performance.
What do you mean by performance? Like, what would be an example?
If they're music, foreign language, that they actually have to do something performing in that area.
So actually doing it. Puedes hablar en español? Muy bien. Necesitamos hablar en español para aprender si usted puede comunicar. All right, we got to talk in the language. We're going to know if you can use it. Great. What else?
Having them teach.
Okay, having them teach. Erin?
They could all pencil and paper test.
I'm sorry?
They could all pencil and paper
test. Pencil and paper test. Absolutely, we do a lot of that.
Discussion.
And assess through discussion. Okay?
Publish.
Like what would we publish?
Mark.
So would you say, who are you sharing it with when you publish? How is that different than turning it in?
Depends on the audience.
Okay. So sharing it with an audience. Who do we normally write for? School? Teacher or now the state? Lots of kids motivated by that? Some of them are, you know. Your compliant kids are the ones that are really getting your test scores up. You know, you need that are motivated by that grade. What does the kid tell you when they raise their hand after you give them the assignment, say, is this for a grade? What are they telling you?
I'm not doing it.
If your answer is no, then their answer is, I don't care. Okay, what else?
Reflective writing.
Reflective writing? Okay, what else?
Thumbs up.
Okay, like hand signals?
Yeah.
Okay. What do we call it? Nonverbal? Or, yeah, right? That'd be a nonverbal. Okay?
Most of that's already good, except for meetings, like with parents and kids, or other staff members.
So, meetings and conversations.
Conversations.
With different folks. You learn stuff about your kids when you meet their parents? Yeah. You learn stuff about the parents when you talk to the kids? When kids journal, do they reveal sometimes a lot? More than you'll probably publish on the blog? Absolutely. They disclose a lot.
You just said simple observation.
That's okay. Simple observation. Absolutely.
Since it's electronic, where we have two vendors out there, the clicker guys. See, the kids just sit back there in their little ABC remotes.
CBS systems, yeah, the response systems. Okay? Speed response.
Well, that's what I was going to say, the electronic clicker.
Okay.
I would just read some
more. Okay. Let's go back over here. Anything we didn't put? Let's review. I can quickly switch to an outline view. It's a little more traditional. We're talking about eye contact, sharing a project, doing a performance, teaching, taking a pencil paper test, discussing, publishing work, reflective writing, nonverbal signals, meetings and conversations with people, which is face-to-face, simple observation using CPS systems. Okay, I'll just open it up. Anything we did not include that you want to put on that list?
Promotion. Yeah, I want to go from one grade to another.
Okay, that's a sign that learning has taken place. Okay.
Well, maybe.
Do we use promotion as an attempt to motivate kids? Yeah. So it's in there, right? Third grade, you don't pass a test in Texas. Everywhere.
Portfolio.
CLB.
Portfolios.
Portfolios. Okay.
Give a child care feedback.
Demonstrate. Just give them to me here. Just
child care feedback. What you tell them.
Okay.
If they can peer teach.
Retelling. Reteaching.
How about simple participation? The kids are participating and doing the activity. You're actually assessing.
Yep. Class discussion. What else?
Standardized.
Standardized testing. How many of you you have taken the GRE. Anybody had to do that? This is Brian Crosby, who's thinking that it's time to talk, and so he's jumping in here. And we hope that this is going to work the first time. Brian, can you hear me?
Hey, how are you doing, Wes?
Hallelujah. We've had a lot of problems with Skype and iChat today, and we have just brainstormed assessment methods. And I'm thrilled that you have jumped in. So why don't we just give you an opportunity to introduce yourself and tell us who you are and what you do, and then we'd like for you to, we know that you've got the blog Learning is Messy, and we want to learn a little bit about that. So tell us about yourself, if you don't mind.
All right, well, my name is Brian Crosby, and I'm a teacher in the Washoe County School District in the Reno, Nevada area. I teach at Agnes Frisley School, which is a very at-risk elementary school. About over 80% of our students are on free and reduced lunch. I've been teaching for about 25 years and really got into integrating technology with students right from the get-go when our school was given an old Apple 2+ years and years ago.
So we just did a little brainstorm and inspiration activity where we were talking about assessment. Assessment's something everybody understands. We're going to talk a little bit about messy learning, but why in the world do you have a blog called Messy Learning, and what in the world does messy learning look like and messy assessment look like in your classroom?
Well, messy learning to me is active learning. It's project-based, problem-based learning. It's not even being sure where to start for the kids, so they actually have to stop and think about that and discuss it and come up with a place. How do we get started on this problem? And so it's not clear cut. It's not the first thing we're supposed to do is this, and the second thing we're supposed to do is that. It's kids learning how to go through that process on their own. It's trying things out and failing and trying again. It's kids arguing and agreeing, and the process you have to have kids go through to do that productively. Arguing is fine as long as it's done in a productive, non-put-down kind of a way. And you have to role-play that and really show kids how that's done. It's time to experiment with the materials you're going to use and come up with new materials to use, and having the time to do that and actually making a mess. It's asking questions. It's finding answers. It's where do we find the answers? It's also learning firsthand about the tools of learning. Where do we look that up? We're all familiar with the standard things, the dictionary, the encyclopedia, and whatever. And where tech comes in is it's just another one of those tools. It's not a standalone tech that's going to solve all our problems. But in this day and age, tech has become a literacy, where if you don't have a grasp of those tech tools, at least generally, you're going to be behind the further on you go in school.
You know, you mentioned role play. Let me interrupt you if I can. And let's do a role play. I'm going to ask you another question, but give the audience a chance to think. I'd like a volunteer who would role play the principal coming in to talk to Brian about his noisy classroom and about the kind of things that's going on. Basically, I want you to role play a principal who is wanting that traditional, quiet, students on task, neatly in rows. We got to get ready for the test, you know, and so probably have somebody here that's a risk taker that might come up and role play that. If not, I'll do it, but think about that a minute. And let me ask you, Brian, do you see kids making strides when they're given an opportunity to have choices in their learning that you think they wouldn't have otherwise? And how do you think the real strong focus on testing has, you know, you mentioned something last night when we talked about, you know, where that seems to pay off and how it doesn't. Can you talk a little bit about the impact really on the student learning and how the students are responding, you know, if you're giving them this messy learning opportunity?
Well, the difference you see it really make for kids is they really become actively involved. They start finding each other's strengths and weaknesses. They, like I say, that active learning piece, it's getting up and moving around more. So kids are just all those pieces of even locomotion being involved in getting up and being able to move around some instead of just sitting in a chair doing the standard kinds of assignments that Basel readers and math books and things tend to give. I think that's a really important part of the whole idea of messy learning.
Anybody thinking they might volunteer to be our role-playing skeptic about messy assessment? While you continue to think about that, we're going to want to volunteer. You've taught for a long time, Brian. Did you start off teaching this way, or is this something that's evolved over time?
Definitely an involved process. My first five or six years I taught in Catholic schools in Oregon and California, back in the era when writing your lesson plans at the end of the day was basically, okay, let's see, today we got to page 121 in the reader, so here's the next day's lesson, that's on page 123, we'll read that, ooh, I need to make a copy of that worksheet, I'll write that down, okay, I'm done with my reading plan, math, we didn't get quite done with this lesson, and, you know, a whole different science was that way, everything was pretty much use the textbook, use the Basel, use the worksheets, and not anywhere near. I did teach at a school where they really pushed the arts very. We had to do 3 hours of art one day a week, so a long art project every week. And that's where I really first started to see that messy learning and the strength of it, because all of a sudden here was a time kids could really focus on something over time and look at it different ways and talk to each other about how they were doing it. So, yeah, that's really been a change. Marilyn Burns and some of those people really got me into doing the messy learning later on.
And I think that's something important for us to recognize. Whatever place we're in teaching, whether we're involved with helping pre-service, in-service teachers, you know, again, it goes back to that driving analogy. If you were in the last session, when you tell a novice driver about shifting, you know, you may want to say about 20 miles an hour. I mean, give them a rule and be a little more structured. But as they become more comfortable with that environment, then they're able to kind of change on their own. So do we have a risk taker here that we're role playing? Am I explaining myself well enough as far as what I'm thinking, as far as a skeptical administrator? You all know about the failure bow, by the way. You can teach your kids about this. When we learn, we learn more, I think, from failures than we do from successes. And kids, what happens when a kid fails big time in front of the class? They retract, they stop talking, they, you know, just kind of withdraw. I worked with, I had a chance to have a Pixar animator consultant work with a group that I was with last summer in California, and she taught us the failure bow. So you all do it. Put your hand.
Interruption. We have the following members of the convention come to the main office.
They're not going
to
call me.
Karen Ragosh, Eric Fletcher, Darren or Darla Mann, and then also if there is a representative of the Garnett USD 365.
I'm hoping they're not going to call me.
Yeah, I know. We're going to be in real trouble. It is great, guys. I'm so slick. We're losing people, but only. I should have, I didn't pass you around the room. So wave to everybody. Wave to Brian. Fast little tour here. I want to unplug my, as I move it around. Okay, so put your hands over your head. Say, woohoo! You celebrate and move on. If you're going to be successful in life, you have to learn from your mistakes. You have to celebrate the learning that takes place and then move on to something else. And that's a good thing to teach your kids, and you'll have them do that. You know, do we make mistakes when we're up here? Absolutely. We want to just get that as a culture to celebrate and move on. So, anybody going to take me up on the offer? You don't have a chance? Will you? Thank you. Let's give her a hand. What's your name?
Lynn,
come on up.
Yahoo!
Lynn, you're the principal of Assessment Elementary School, and Brian is one of your teachers, and you've noticed that there's a lot of noise coming from his room, and, you know, have a discussion with him, because you're concerned.
Brian, I've had some complaints from your neighboring teachers that your classroom's a little bit too loud. Can you explain how we can solve this problem?
First of all, but this was happening because they just walked in my room and something was going on. I will have you walk around and take a look. And so what's going on? What are kids doing here? Is it just a noisy, out of control place, or is there learning going on here? And so let's walk around each group and listen in and just and what do we really see happening here? Is this what you'd like to hear? I mean, listen to the kid talk here. What are they saying? What questions they're asking each other? Problems they're solving? What do you see them doing? The very few times I've had principals come in the door and after they've been touring through the school and seeing that, coming out of one quiet room after another, they leave going, yeah, okay, that's exactly. They write just the kinds of things I want them to be doing. So I think...
Play back to him here. You're the principal, so don't let him lecture on.
And that's really wonderful. It makes a lot of sense to me. But I don't understand how I'm going to answer to my superiors that your students are actually getting the things they need for that assessment. You know, if the money comes from passing that assessment, how do I know you're doing it? How do you know you're doing it? How do they know they're doing it?
Let's take a look at the assessment pieces we have. We'll take a look at the student writing that's come out of this, and let's go around and talk to the kids and ask them what they've learned about whatever context area we're talking about here, if this is a science class or a writing class or whatever it happens to be. So, principal, let's walk around and look at what the kids are generating here, what's the product they're coming up with. Let's ask them questions about their understanding, and let's see how they did on the pre-test and some of the assessments we've done in between. We're kind of doing a formative assessment piece here along the way. So let me show you the kind of results we're getting.
Well, and I can understand that, too. Do you have paper-pencil kind of things that I can show your fellow teachers that says, yes, he really is teaching the things just like you are, that he's meeting those standards that you have to meet?
Absolutely, and beyond that, let's look at some of these charts the kids are making that show the data they've been gathering, and let's show some of the journal pieces the kids have been writing, and what were they writing early on in this process, and what are they saying now, and feel free to have teachers come in and observe, bring them in and let them see what we're doing in here.
Are your students going to be able to transfer that information from their group learning into that assessment at the end of the year? I mean, are they capable of doing that? Are you sharing that kind of style with them in any way?
Sure. In fact, you can see the form of the assessments I'm using here. I'm using the same kind of format as the standardized testing and the CRTs, and so the kids are practicing that all the time. And so you can see I'm really doing the same kinds of assessment pieces that we do anyhow, and then we're doing a lot more of that because we have a product to look at and we have kids we can talk to about what they're learning as they're in the process of doing that learning.
I have to tell you, this is very hard for me because I have a very noisy classroom as well. I appreciate you giving me some of the answers that I need. I don't have a very quiet classroom, so thank you very much.
Hey, let's give them all a hand. All right. Well, Brian, what would you kind of give this group of folks? I don't know, maybe 30 people or so, 20 to 30 people. They're all going to, like you, go into this next school year. What are you excited about? What kind of an encouraging message would you give them as they head into the next year?
Well, depending on what kind of school you come from, like I said in my introduction, I come from a very at-risk school where we've been under the full weight of the No Child Left Behind and testing. You can tell I'm way more into the project-based, problem-based kind of learning, which we've been mostly forced out of. And the good news is as the past school year went along, the door was opening more. It was my new principal saw the kinds of things I do when I did drag project-based out. She got fired up because she enjoys that. She did a lot of that when she was a teacher, and she looked back at my test scores and saw, guess what? My test scores are as good as anybody in the schools, and they always have been. And she also saw that we were getting a bit stilted and our what we do with kids, the lack of art up around the room because it's all charts and things, which is all good stuff. There's nothing wrong with it. But we've gotten too much away from, you know, the stuff that allows kids to build schema over time. I was telling Wes last night how one of the things we've really come to is that, you know, our first, second, and third graders and our kindergartners, they do pretty much as well as most schools in our district is at risk as we are on those assessment pieces. But every year after that, our scores drop off, and we've really come to know that it's that schema building. I live very close to Lake Tahoe here, and we take sixth graders up there that are afraid to swim because of the sharks. Even though they lived here almost their whole life, they think there's sharks in a mountain lake. Those are the kinds of scary things to me when kids can't read a story or whatever and have schema for anything, that they're losing out by not having PE and not having art and not doing project-based work. So that's my good piece of news, is I think maybe that pendulum is starting to swing back the other way. I'm starting to see a chink in the armor.
All right. Well, let's give Brian a hand. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you.
Thank you. And we'll see you online.
All right.
Does anybody know if there's a session in here that starts at 10:30?
10:45.
All right. Well, you know what? I'm going to feel free to leave at 10:30 if you would like to. But since we started late, we'll just go a little bit longer here. And if you need to get up and go, feel free to. But what I would like to share with you is kind of a conclusion. It's going to be maybe about 15-minute conclusion. Oh, really? We do have 10:45?
Yeah, 10:45.
Oh, I'm going to relax.
Yeah, you have.
Oh,
you're okay. I thought we were good. I'll breathe then. Was that cool?
Yeah.
That's very cool. Would you like to do that in your classroom in a safe way? Bring an expert in? Have them talk to your kids? Do you think your kids would be excited about that? Okay. Do you have a cell phone? You know you can bring an expert in with a phone. You know, it's possible to do that. Brian has had his kids contact folks in the local school, in colleges, and universities. He told me last night he had somebody call him and say, hey, I've had some fifth graders call me they were from so-and-so school, and they are doing a project, and they need some information about water quality. Maybe you're their teacher. Is this legitimate? He said, yeah, that is. That's what they do. He said, I've never had anybody do this before. And that person came to their classroom and talked to them, and the kids ran the whole interview, and man, they're just fired up. So we don't have to do it with the sexiest, fanciest technology. We can do it with the technology we have, which may be the phone. Okay? Which, by the way, if you have your phones, feel free to use them. We are the phone company. All right. Yes, ma'am.
Not being during the other session. What's reasons for?
Good question. And I had to have that in the other session. This is a little science. Deltas change in science, all right? Thank you for asking. And you know what? There is not such a thing as a stupid question, because if you're wondering something, that's another thing we just have to cultivate. You've got an IT person that you work with who looks at you like you're an idiot when you ask a question. That person needs a new attitude, because you are the person they serve, and they should be there to help you learn and grow. So I'm glad you asked that. Thank you. Why should we change the way we teach? There's a lot of reasons. How many of you have read or listened to or heard about The World is Flat? It's probably the number one book right now in educational technology conferences and circles. People are talking about. I subjected my family to this on my iPod last summer when we drove. I think it was last summer. We listened to this whole thing, but Friedman talks about the flatteners of this world. You know, your taxes are probably, you know, if you're going to a tax place, likely being done in India, and the server is over here in the United States, and we've got folks over in India. How many of you have called for help, and you've heard this foreign voice, and you've asked them, where are you? Oh, I'm in Bangalore. Oh, I'm in New Delhi. Oh, I'm in, you know, what time is it there? Oh, gosh, it's the middle of the night. The world is flat, and that is because fiber optic cable has made it possible for us to do what we've done today. And somebody, I think, had asked about Skype. Skype is a free program that you can download for Windows, for Macintosh, for Linux. I made a little tongue-in-cheek comment in my last session, but I'm a trilingual computer user. Yeah, I use Windows computers every day. You know, at Texas Tech, 90% of our users all use Windows. And I did too, and I still do. But I also use Linux. That's a free operating system that has, it's amazing. I can legally put on any old computer that I have. And I also use a Mac computer. So Skype is a way that we can talk to the world. And if you look at my Skype list, you know,
Mac's your favorite too, right?
Skype is my favorite?
No, Mac.
Oh, well, I always try to use the most powerful, simple tool that I can when I want to do something, because I'm more interested in creatively doing things than technically getting bogged down and stuff. So, you know, no viruses and no malware and powerful tools is good. So this is usually the platform that I choose. But I use, because I have to, multiple ones. You can see there's people, you know, that are online, that are offline. We've got people from around the world. Brian, we just talked to, is in Reno. Sandy Cooper is a faculty member who's in Louisiana. I Skyped with her last night. Cheryl Oakes is in Maine. The world is right here. Darren Kapachwa is a secondary math teacher in Winnipeg, Manitoba. People all over the world. So these tools are available. And we need to use them in our classroom. The world is flat, but yet our classrooms look, in a lot of cases, the way they have looked for many, many years. How many of you have heard of Dan Pink and his book, A Whole New Mind? Please add this to your future reading list. His website is just danpink.com, danpink.com. His book is called A Whole New Mind, Why Right-Brainers Will Rule the Future. Now, Friedman scares a lot of people. Oh my gosh, we gotta get with it. China's gonna eat our lunch. India's gonna eat our lunch. Well, guess what, folks? 1 in 5 people on the planet are Chinese, okay? I don't care what kind of legislation Congress passes, they're not gonna change global demographics. There are a lot of folks in China who are hungry for a better life, and they are moving to the city, and they are willing to work for less than a lot of folks here in the United States will. But the thing that Pink says is, what is the future going to hold? Does anybody here shop only at Walmart and never go to another store? Does anybody like Target? I love Target. My wife loves Target, okay? Target has designer labels, you know, that looks good. And it is more than just function. It is about style, and it is about, you know, a lot more than just the cheapest product at the cheapest price. And so Pink says, if you look at the skills we're gonna need in the future, it's a lot more than just do it, you know, better, faster, and cheaper. We're gonna have to have creative folks who can tell stories, who can synthesize ideas, who can take risks, who can lead groups. We're gonna need these things. So Pink is a great author to read, and I participated in a leadership forum for superintendents last year where they read this, and we used that to think about the school of the future. What does school need to look like, and how does it need to look different? Partnership for 21st Century Skills. www.21stcenturyskills.org. And again, all these links are going to be in that wiki for you to link to if you want to go to them. But you've got a lot of groups like this that get together, the business folks, the education folks, and they say, what do our kids need for the future? And you know what? They typically don't say they need to be able to score really high on that GRE. They need to be able to do really well on that ACT, because every day at work, we give them the SAT. We give them the ACT. And if they can't, you know, score a 30, we fire them on the spot. Absolutely not. They
Maybe
say...
we need to bring those congressmen into this discussion.
Yeah. Absolutely. The more people that we bring in...
decisions.
The more people we bring into the conversation, the more potential there is for people's perceptions to be changed. And so what they say is, kids need to learn how to access real information. They need to know how to validate whether that information is accurate or not, because the textbook is not the sole source anymore. Kids need to work together collaboratively. They need to be self-starters, because if you work for Google now, and you work for Google Labs, I think like officially you're supposed to work 20% of the time or something. Literally. You know, we've got folks who are working from home. Sandy Cooper, who is vacationing in Louisiana, told me last night her brother lives in Costa Rica, and he has a house in Panama. What in the world does he do? Well, he
basically he's a computer programmer, and he can live anywhere in the world, and his company is in Boston. By the way, our kids should all be learning some programming. If you're not doing logo or robotics or something like that to help your kids get some coding, and I mean, kids get into that kind of stuff. And the future is going to be written increasingly in code. Not saying we all have to be geeks. That's not what Dan Pink says, by the way. Dan Pink does not say everyone needs a Cisco, you know, certification. But he does say we need kids to be engaged in creative activities where they are acquiring these skills that we're not seeing in schools today. Okay? You heard Bill Gates? You heard about the Gates Foundation? Did you see the Oprah show? Did you hear about this? Is the Gates Foundation, is Bill himself happy with the state of education in America today? No, he gives us a failing grade. Now, I would insert in here that we've got to remember the poverty formula. We educate everybody here in the great United States of America, and I'm glad about that. But when we compare scores and we do these kind of things, we really need to take that into consideration, because you as teachers are doing a great job with the kids you have when you compare them traditionally to those other kids in other places. The data shows this. David Berliner, who's a professor at Arizona State, came to the College of Education at Texas Tech this last semester and has done the quantitative research and statistics, and it shows all this. But anyway, Gates and other people are not happy with dropouts, and you and I shouldn't be either. In Texas, the Closing the Gaps Coalition is trying to bring the state dropout rate to the national average, because we lose about half our kids before high school graduation. Folks, it is not acceptable. Kids are not engaged. That's why we have to do something different. We have legislators saying, gosh, let's do more of the same stuff we've always done, but let's do it harder and harder, and let's beat people up more when they don't do it. And maybe that'll help. You know what? It won't. That will not be the answer we need. The answer we need is to have some messy assessment. Do you know about Edutopia? Fantastic resource. Edutopia.org is the George Lucas Educational Foundation. Go to their website, say you want their magazine, they will send it to you. I don't know if I've got a copy here. I usually keep one that I can read. Free magazine they'll send you. George Lucas is one of these folks that did not, he didn't really get hooked in school that well. He wants to make a difference. In fact, Marco Torres, who the movie I showed you about, When I Become a Teacher, he made that with some teachers at his school, is on the board for the George Lucas Educational Foundation. He told me in March that George Lucas started one of the meetings by saying, we need to stop teaching English in this country. What do you think? Oh my gosh, is he going to say teach Spanish? I mean, he said, no, we need to teach literacy. Because when we teach English, we probably think of grammar, sentence diagramming, spelling tests. We don't think about the ways in which kids communicate today, which increasingly involve media. How are you communicated to? Through video, through, you know, audio, with the web. I mean, manipulation's happening all over with marketing. We got to teach kids this language. So Edutopia is a great voice. And that whole organization, they've got a group that blogs called the Spiral Notebook Bloggers. And they're folks who have this vision. And you can connect with them, get their ideas, share with them, comment with them. It's a great thing. Last one I'll share with you is the Schlechte Center. Anybody know about Phil Schlechte? I just learned about this not long ago through a podcast. And Phil Schlechte has a center called the Schlechte Center. And he has based his whole approach to leadership and school reform on two things. The first one is engagement. The second is sustained change. Now, we are teachers in this room. I don't think anybody raised their hand as an administrator, but even if you are, we're all familiar with, this is the program for this year, right? This is the latest deal. This is what we're doing. And the teachers roll their eyes. Okay, let's go ahead and do it. This is not a small program. This is about rethinking the role of the teacher and rethinking the role of the student. And again, saying that the teacher's role is not to just be the planner and the performer, which I'm kind of doing today. That's okay. It's not to do that all the time. It's also to be the designer of learning opportunities. Opportunities where kids can interact with each other, they can interact with content, they can create projects, where authentic learning happens, and you get to what's called profound learning. And they'll tell you, you'll get the test scores, but you know what you also get? You get kids motivated to be in school
you get dropout rates reducing, you get what we want, which is engagement and success, and you can get joy in the classroom. And would anybody here want to be part of an initiative that restores some joy to teaching? I mean, how many people do you know who have gotten out of the profession because the joy had left? So it's big stuff. This is one of his books. It's called Working on the Work, an Action Plan for Teachers, Principals, and Superintendents. I have not read this yet. I've just listened to the podcast. I've talked to folks. And this, to me, it's not technology specific. This session actually is not technology specific, even though we're using technology. It is all about engaging kids in authentic learning opportunities, inviting them. You cannot force a kid to learn. You can invite them to learn, but you can't force them to. Okay? I don't think we're talking about this enough. There's a disconnect between the skills we say kids should have and the skills that are reinforced in a time-pressured, fear-laden, high-stakes testing environment. Okay? I come from Texas. I'm actually a Kansan, so I'm really excited to be here in Kansas because my family still lives in Manhattan. I grew up here, but I've lived in Texas now for 13 years. We've been doing high-stakes testing for a long time. And let me tell you, folks, I am glad to have my kids that will start school this next year. We're going to have recess in third grade. And if my kids had stayed in the school where they were last year, officially, there would not be any recess starting in third grade because we don't have time for recess in Texas. We are getting ready for the test. That is immoral. We should not stand for it. I feel strongly about this. Personally, I love recess. I loved it as a kid. I loved it as a teacher. We need to have unstructured time. I'm serious. I want to have recess now. Anybody want to go out and have recess? You know, we need unstructured opportunities to negotiate social interaction and stuff. I mean, we can't be structured all the time. The point of this slide, though, is that when we focus just on the test, just on improving the scores, you don't get the edutopia-type learning. If you watch some of the video profiles of the teachers there, those teachers, like Brian, that we video conference with today, are not focused tunnel vision on the test. They see a bigger picture, and it's a picture of messy assessment. So I'm afraid we're not going to have time for Tim Wilson. Just can't do it all. We've just got a couple minutes left. But Tim was going to talk to us from the position of a tech director in Minnesota. What he sees kids needing is skills. What do kids need to be doing in school? Not just in their one technology class that they might take, but throughout their curriculum. And so I'd invite you to visit Tim's blog and listen to his podcast. I mean, he is well connected. He interviewed the founder of Moodle, Martin Dubelmas, last year, and has a podcast where he's just over Skype just talking to Martin about, well, how'd you design Moodle? And, you know, you say it's constructivist? I mean, what does that mean? How do you think that tool should be used to extend conversations beyond the regular, you know, class day? So anyway, we won't have time for that. I'll apologize to Tim. So last thing, we may go just a couple minutes beyond. Messy learning and messy assessment. I'm going to finish up by telling you what I think messy learning is not, and what it is, and what messy assessment is not, and what it is, okay? Messy learning is not a scripted curriculum, okay? We've got schools today saying, you need to be on page 5 tomorrow on Wednesday, and when I come to your classroom, if you're not, you're in trouble. Forget that. That is not going to guarantee academic success. We had a teachable moment. It didn't work entirely, but we had a Skype from China today. Was I wrong to try and take an opportunity to try to do that? I don't think so. That's pretty cool. And we want to do teachable moments. So a scripted curriculum is not saying everyone has to be on this page at this moment every day and we're going to have engagement and learning. There's no guarantee that you will. By the way, what's the number one thing we need in schools to improve education? Is it a new curriculum? Is it a new piece of legislation? I think it's a passionate teacher. Okay, it's you, it's me, the teacher is the answer. Messy learning is not solely textbook based, okay? The world is not based on textbooks. It doesn't mean we throw them out if we have them. But gosh, if it says, you know, Ann Richards is the governor of Texas, as some of our Texas social studies books might still say, then perhaps we should go to another source, even Wikipedia, okay? It's not only teaching math and reading. Ryan told me last night, he had a principal who said, or no, the superintendent, and said, these low-performing schools, really all they need to do is math and reading. We don't have time for anything else. Cut out the art, cut out the music, cut out the science, cut out the social studies, cut out the fluff, because we're going to pass the test. That's not messy learning. And I'll show you, I'll talk about Jonathan Kozol, and I'll tell you what that is. It's called prison prep. Messy learning is cutting out art, and, is not cutting out art and music. Kids need to be engaged in performance-based learning. Can we use technology in all this? Absolutely. I was learning from Tanya, right, about it at Wichita State, how you had folks learning the fiddle from people in Ireland, and they were performing, and they were, people here in Kansas were dancing to music that was being played over the internet. I mean, the collaborative possibilities are only going to get better and richer. But the technology is not the answer. It's the way that we use it, okay? Messy learning is not boring. Now, do we need to memorize our multiplication facts? Yeah, probably. I bet you there's a lot of people in this world that don't know their facts that are making good money. I've met a few truck drivers. They may know their tables too, I don't know. But messy learning oftentimes is the opposite of that. It's not boring. It's not dropout enhancing, okay? You're not gonna see more kids skipping class if you're really doing messy learning. It's not preparation for prison. Do you know about the connection? We were talking about this in the car on the way up. Between prison budgets for states and education budgets, if you look at a state like Texas, the lion's share of money is spent in two places. We pay for prisons, and we pay for education. And you can pay for it now, or you can pay for it later, but you're going to pay. And have you heard of Jonathan Kozol's book, The Shame of the Nation? It is a crime what we are doing to kids in many low socioeconomic environments when we are basically saying, sit down, shut up, look at that worksheet, and do what I say. We are not inviting them, as we should, to be in this environment of authentic learning. I'm telling you, we've got to change this. I mean, I'm not saying you're going to change the nation. I'm saying you can change your classroom. You can change your school. All right? So what is messy learning? That's what it's not. It's differentiated instruction. Have you heard of this? Okay, because kids learn differently. And we do different things for different learners. It's students solving their own problems. You heard Brian talk about that, right? What happens when the kid says, what do I do? A lot of times we say, well, you're going to do this, you're going to do this. What did he say? Figure it out. Talk. You guys get together. You're smart. What resources do you need? Ask me, how can I help facilitate you together collaborating and solving your problem? Students need to teach each other. You heard Will Richardson talk about this yesterday. That was a key point of what he said, was kids are creating knowledge products so that they teach other people. The teacher is facilitating more. We've heard this whole thing, not being the sage on the stage, but the guide on the side. If there's a time to do it, we're doing it now. But we shouldn't do it all the time. We need kids to have conversations. Okay, I think a measurement of learning in our classroom should be, are the kids having conversations on their own? Cheryl Oakes, who we video conference with in the first session from Maine, interacting with Think.com and having conversations with each other. Now, they may not all be talking about their math facts. I'm sure they're not, right? But they're having conversations. And if we get kids talking, I think we are getting them to learn. It's active. It's making knowledge products. It's highly collaborative. It's real world. It's multimodal, which means, like, think about learning styles, right? I mean, this is Howard Gardner. We know this stuff. You know, is it kinesthetic? Is it visual? Is it just auditory? You know, mix it up. It's full of teachable moments, and at times, it can be joyful. It's not going to be a paradise. It's going to be hard, okay? And so let's talk quickly about messy assessment. It's not just summative. Do we do summative assessment? All the time, okay? It's not just at the knowledge comprehension level. Remember Bloom's taxonomy? Lower order stuff? We got to push it up, the pyramid. It's not always writing to a prompt, okay? We've got to give kids choices. It's not easily plagiarized. Okay, if your kids can go on the web and just plagiarize your assignment like that, you need to ask them a different question. You need to change your assignment. A teacher who's saying, give me a report about a country in Europe, 3 pages, you know, turn it in by Friday, needs to ask a different question. This isn't easy stuff. Brian said that. He's taught for 25 years. He didn't start teaching this way. But this is the way we want teachers to teach as they stay in the profession. And of course, we don't have a teacher, we really don't have a teacher recruitment problem in America. We have a teacher retention problem, and we need to keep all the good teachers.
But we do have a teacher recruitment problem, because I teach in a college of education, and less kids are going into education because of all of this stuff that they are hearing about teaching.
My point
would
be,
making it harder to get your teaching certificate as well.
My point would be, we need to probably focus even more on retaining those teachers, because if we would retain more, the situation would be better. But you're right. In rural America, absolutely, you've got trouble recruiting folks. All right. We'll go on to over five. I just got a couple more slides. It's not just planning and performance. It's not just focused on minimum standards. Here's what it is. It's ongoing assessment that includes formative and summative assessment. You're creating knowledge products. You can't fake the work, okay? If you're making a video like Marco Torres is having his kids do, they can't just fake that, you know? They're going to be creating things that are authentic, and they're creating them for an authentic audience. They are involved in the evaluation as students. They have choices about their learning. They're doing critical thinking. They're doing project-based learning. They're having different learning styles supported. And I think it creates memories not easily forgotten. And I'll tell you this, if you would like to do something at your school, if you don't have a digital video festival, Tim Tyson, who's the principal of Mabry Middle School in Georgia, says nothing has been bigger in terms of changing his culture at the school than having a digital film festival, because the level of engagement that the kids have to creating those videos is phenomenal. Why? Because who are they creating that for? They're creating it for each other. They're creating it for their parents. They're creating it for their community, for an authentic audience. And this is why blogging and these ideas of reaching out beyond the walls of the classroom are really important. At times, this can be fun. So we didn't get to talk to Brian, but if you go to learningismessy.com, you'll find this blog. I'm sorry, we didn't talk to Brian. Yeah, we didn't talk to Tim. Last slides. It's a fork in the road, people. Okay? But it's not a little fork. It really is a fork. What are we going to do with education? Robert Frost, The Road Not Taken, 1916. Two roads diverged in a yellow wood, and sorry I could not travel both and be one traveler. Long I stood and looked down one as far as I could to where it bent in the undergrowth. Then I took the other, and just as fair, and having perhaps the better claim because it was grassy and wanted wear, though as for that, the passing there had warned them really about the same. And both that morning, equally lay, in leaves no step had trodden black, oh, I kept the first for another day. Yet, knowing how way leads on to way, I doubted if I should ever come back. I shall be telling this with a sigh, somewhere ages and ages hence. Two roads diverged in a wood, and I took the one less traveled, and that has made all the difference. Be the difference. Good luck. We'll be in touch with you.
Moving at the Speed of Creativity podcasts are independently produced and syndicated for a global audience by Wesley Fryer and are shared under a Creative Commons Attribution 2.5 license. Learn more at www.speedofcreativity.org.